I have the great pleasure to be here today and tell you about this very interesting project that I've been working on for the last, 1.5, 2 years. I have to say it's the most exciting project I've ever worked on. And we just started to place our orders this week, so it's pretty fresh. And we're excited now to start on this journey together with four suppliers for the next 4 years in a framework contract on delivering catering services to the University of Oslo. Actually, we like to call them partners instead of suppliers, because basically they're sort of innovation partners, because there has been a lot of, I would almost say, pioneering work here before and during the tender. As far as I know, there's no public organization of our size or similar to us who has put sustainability with such high ambitions than we had for this type of procurement. And this is showcased in some of the quotes for, let me see if this one works. Usually I should just push this button. I can use the this one as well.
Oh,
Okay, great. I've been told by some smart people in communications that I should showcase this as often as I can. These are some very kind words from one of our new suppliers. And what was interesting for me to see was that the market responded really positive to our requirements. And so, because what we're trying to do is to set a new standard for sustainable catering. But you might ask, what's so innovative about ordering catering services anyway? And I have to admit, I was quite satisfied when I came up with a fancy title for my presentation, which included the buzzwords innovation, sustainability, check. Let me disappoint you if you wait for me to present something revolutionary. We haven't invented a new pill or a set of pills that will meet all your dietary needs. Neither have we developed any new knowledge that says that the more bacon, burgers, fat, delicious cinnamon rolls you eat, the more healthy you get. I'm sorry. But what I think is most intriguing, at least as for me as a procurement advisor, is that we've done small incremental innovations in every part of the procurement process. And by that I mean what, which methods and activities we conducted in the dialogue phase, also the collaboration project we had between the procurement part, procurement office and researchers, the way we tried to lower the threshold for bidders during the process, the focus we had on quality instead of price. Actually, price was out of the negotiation phase completely. We only used a set of fixed prices. And also what we did in the contract following up. So we have implemented an incentive model, and we think, as I said, of our suppliers as partners rather than a traditional buyer-customer relationship. So I'm going to scratch the surface on most of these topics in my presentation today. But much of the knowledge is sort of a know-how that we have developed, and a little bit, I have to say, inside our brains, even though I try to articulate it as best as I can today. But one really concrete and physical output of this is our sustainable contract terms. And we invite everyone to use them so we can reach out from just our university and perhaps have an even bigger impact than we can for ourselves. So, what we have accomplished with the sustainable contract terms is that we invite our suppliers to create new menus. Fruit and vegetables are now the new stars of the show. They have done a complete menu makeover. We also source food now. In a responsible manner, both in terms of the environment, but also in terms of the social aspect, and that we take care in giving everyone in the value chains a decent pay, for instance, and good working conditions. We will get food that is more local and more seasonal. And I think we overcome the le legislative issues in a good way. And we will get food that is healthy. So we invite everyone to binge in this food as much as they want, or if they have a budget. But health-wise, that's not an issue. And the impact we had on CO2 reduction is estimated to be quite substantial. So this we will achieve next year already. And this is probably a conservative estimate. We have everything between 64 and 80%, but yeah, we showcase the conservative estimate for you today. So this has been the core project team. And apart from the procurer at the right, these are very clever, intelligent people who have a background from everything from the legal side to food and methods used for deliberative dialogue, just to mention a few. But it's probably unfair of me to just show a few people because this has really been a interdisciplinary project that has involved a lot of people across the university, in the market, and also our users. As you can see from left, I'm not going to go into detail here, but this is the research collaboration project we did. We also had input on our sustainable contract terms for from other scholars at other universities across Europe. We had a heck of a lot of user engagement and dialogue activities, so I think we know our users pretty well by now. I also think we understand the market and what they are concerned about. We did a lot of market dialogue. I'm going to mention one of them pretty soon. And all of this gave us input to our sustainable contract terms. So let's start to talk a little bit about dialogue. We all know how important it is, but it's not always easy, is it? And one success factor for us was that we understood our market. Yeah, started to get a bit slow. Okay. Yeah, we did a dialogue conference together with Oslo Met. That was really useful for us. Basically, we gathered people with knowledge in many different areas and put them around tables. One table could look like this. So we had the usual suspects, the suppliers who did the catering services, but we also had others. For instance, people from the meal industry. So it could be restaurants, it could be farmers, it could be butchers and other producers. And usually there were one innovator around the table or a market disruptor, someone with a good idea. And we also have one representing a profession. So for instance, someone who plays an important role as a legislator, or for instance, someone providing a food certificate. And when you mix those different backgrounds together, you get really nice discussions. For instance, that guy from Indre Oslo Matforedling, who makes sausages and other products from meat, of course, but he told us about the importance of using surplus products, products that are not really commercial attractive. For instance, hen. After hens have done their wonderful job laying eggs for us, they get gassed to death, 3 million every year in Norway, and used in the cement and asphalt industry. So why not use hen to make beautiful, tasty sausages? And combined with, for instance, a supplier who have a 100% vegan menu, that it gives you some interesting discussions. And one of the insights we learned from the market dialogue activities was that, yes, the market are ready for sustainable requirements. And we should also split up the tender in order to get everyone on board. Everyone with a good idea can participate in our tender. Because often you find good ideas in entrepreneurs and small companies. And third, and one of the most important ones was this one, trust the chef, or let the supplier do what they do the best. So for us, it's about ordering. It's about knowing how many who will attend an event, knowing what kind of event it is, place an order, and then it's up to the supplier to deliver food that is tasty and suits the occasion. And by doing that, it makes the supplier have more possibilities to, for instance, reduce food waste. It's possible to change the menu based on what's available. It could be seasonal produce. Actually, right now we have one of our suppliers out in the woods picking mushrooms to have on the menu. It will make it easier for them to use surplus product. One of our suppliers every now and then can get hold of some kind of vegetables that are basically thrown away and not used, but they can use it that particular week, for instance. For example, carrots, that's put that on the menu that week for us. So it obviously also gives more variation to the end user. And let me present to you the delightful journey of how we order food at the university. On average, we use 22 minutes just to complete a food order. We have approximately 100 different order forms, and we have a process that's not only consists of one step, two, three, four, five, six, seven steps just to complete an order. And before, we like to specify each serving in great detail. This is just an example, but now things change. Now we just specify a meal category, and then we invite the supplier to use their creativity to give us a meal that is appropriate. And of course, in accordance to our sustainable contract terms. And that leads me over to our sustainable contract terms, what they are. And first of all, let me say that I don't have time to go into detail about every one of them. So I will try to limit myself to present three of what I think is the most important ones. But first, for us, it was important to define sustainability in a clear way and be very precise of what we mean about sustainability and how the suppliers will, what the requirements were. And because sustainability is a word with many different connotations, people put a lot of different meanings into the word. For instance, some might call this sustainable, others may not. So obviously, an important question: how can we avoid greenwashing? How can we sort of have a holistic approach to sustainability? And just as we did with the market, you have to trust the people with the knowledge. So utilize the expertise to the fullest and actually listen to it. So we have tried to maximize sustainability. I would thank our leaders at the university for this because they have given us full freedom to maximize sustainability. The only constraint we have had really is that it should be done within the government's rates for hospitality and catering. So we use a fixed price structure, and we have only evaluated on sustainability and user experience in our tender. Both were equally important. And this one, we use research-based requirements and not ideology. And that gives us confidence in our argumentation for over users, for instance. We know that food is ordering food is much more than ordering goods or services. It's about identity. Food is culture. Needless to say, people have a close relationship to food. They stuff their bodies with it every day. So you get questions like this: what about the pork? Will I have pork on the new contract? What about sheep? This one tastes good. And the cow, right? Can we have beef on the menu? And I say, please have a seat. You may have meat, but there are certain threshold values. And one of them is this one, that the meal should contribute to achieving the 1.5 degree target of global warming. And this one is based, these threshold values are based on the one planet plate model. And it says that if everyone should in the world should eat according to the 1.5 target, what climate impact should each serving have? And we have ju made some adjustment for Norwegian cuisine. The characteristic of a Norwegian diet, which traditionally puts more emphasis on breakfast than dinner, perhaps. Anyway, this is easy for the supplier. It's easy for the supplier to understand, and we provided them with tools to calculate the climate impact on each dish and on each ingredient, and a common database that they can rely on. Another important requirement was our health requirements. And we did a remake of the plate model. Everyone in Norway knows about the plate model. And this is based on the Eat Lancet Commission on Healthy Diets. And some of the requirements you can see here is quite new and quite ambitious, I would say, at least comparing to what we got before. Because at least 50% of the serving should be of fruits and vegetables. You should make the meals from scratch with preferably fresh seasonal ingredients. And you cannot use any ultra-processed ingredients. So this is easy for the supplier to understand, at least when we explain what we mean about ultra-processing. But it's challenging to comply. And one example is wraps. Wraps have become really popular, at least for us, and we buy a lot of it. And what's interesting about wraps is that it's basically a clever way to pack a salad. So it could be really sustainable, right? And but what's not so good is that the tortilla that is commonly used as wrapping, it's ultra processed. So the suppliers came to us and asked us, "Are you sure you want to insist on not buying wraps?" Yes, but if you can come up with a solution that makes the tortilla not ultra processed, that's fine. And actually, a few weeks later, three out of four suppliers have come up with a solution. One of them is using a sub-supplier who take surplus up to 50% surplus vegetables and use it to bake the tortilla. Another one bake the tortilla themselves, and all of them have then come up with a product that is fresher, that is healthier, that actually has they have cut the value chains for that particular product, and they have done some taste samples of this, and it tastes better. Of course, fresh food tends to taste better. So they thanked us for being a demanding customer, and they want to use this on to other customers as well. So that's a nice story to tell. And I would say climate and health requirements were the ones who changed the menus the most, or contributed to changing the menus. But as you know, sustainability is more than climate and health. And for food especially, it's really important to know where you source your ingredients from. And because the only way to know the true sustainability rating of a product or an ingredient is to know how it is produced. And this is a picture from a banana plantation in the Dominican Republic. And those banana plantations are often huge, cover big areas. Sadly enough, they're often established in areas that are rich on species. And this is, of course, a monoculture, so it's bad for biodiversity. And as you can see here from the play, spraying those pesticides over the bananas and banana plant, and also the workers, which sadly enough are unprotected. So this showcases that sustainability is a huge topic, and it encompasses a lot. We, as a university especially, it's important for us to have an holistic approach to sustainability. And this is the model we used to define sustainability. And this, I think many of you are familiar with, the donut model. For those of you who are not, this model illustrates nine research-based environmental dimensions that you should not overshoot. If you do so, it will negatively affect the planet's ability to support life, basically. So that forms the environmental ceiling. And the floor in the model is the social dimensions. And there are 12 social dimensions. That's basically basic human rights or basic human needs. So if you operate inside the donut, you're safe. Then you ensure that everyone's basic needs are met without and with respect of the planet's ecological limits. So many of these topics are difficult to measure. And I have told you about the thresholds for climate and health. They actually are pretty good proxies for sustainability, or at least for what's unsustainable, but they do not encompass all dimensions. So we lean quite heavily on due diligence. The supplier shall do due diligence for all the ingredients they use. And as a minimum, they should know where and how the ingredients and products included in the meal are produced. And the ingredients should, of course, be good for the environment, including animal welfare. But this doesn't mean they have to know everything about the production of every ingredient, but they have to provide us with enough evidence so that we can trust them and trust that the production most likely take place in a responsible manner. And there are easy ways to do this, and there are more complex ways to do this. One of the easy ways to document sustainability is using the WWF's guide for vegetables. They also have a similar guide for meat and for seafood. And this particular one takes into account climate, biodiversity, water, and pesticide used, and it's research-based. I'm not going into details there, but it's an article from the Swedish University of Agricultural Sciences that forms the basis of this traffic light model. So it's a really simple traffic light model based on country of origin and certification of certain ingredients. And we have said that a green light, if you have a product inside the green light, that serves as a due diligence for that particular product. So in this case, if they want to put bananas on the menu, they have to be EU organic. They could perhaps also include products from the yellow category, but then they have to document that in a thorough way. So that means a lot of more work for the supplier. But the negatives with this approach is that it only shows compliance with our minimum requirements. So a better way for the supplier to document sustainability is to know who they source from precisely, know the individual producer, know the farmer, and know how he or she produces. Do they do this in a sustainable way that is also socially just? So this combination between requirements and incentives makes the supplier work with the value chains, because we have said that knowing your individual producer will give you a better sustainability rating, of course, if they also produce in an environmental sustainable way. And we have actually, this is interesting because we have seen a shift already to, first of all, wholesalers that have full transparency of their value chain. But more interestingly, also a shift towards more organic products. We have seen them working on shortening their value chain because they put more emphasis on ingredients that are easier to document. And in many cases, this means buying more local. And we haven't said that they must buy local. We cannot due to legislation, but we put the emphasis we've put on traceability makes them do so anyway. And this is an example of how they work with the menus. Perhaps maybe instead of buying bananas from Dominican Republic or Colombia or whatever, they use Norwegian apples to make a delicious dessert. So let's go over to the tender competition. I've illustrated this with a piece of cake. Probably it should have been a picture of a carrot cake or something even more healthy. But the point here is to illustrate that one of the conclusions from the market dialogue that we should slice up the cake into smaller pieces so that everyone could have the possibility to participate. And doing and the one way to do that is to try to lower the threshold for tender submissions. Because we know it's not easy for many actors here to participate in public tenders in general, and especially this market is, without insulting one, I would say that it's a bit immature. So this is just an example to show you how we split up the catering services into many meal categories, and we invited a supplier to make a bid for everyone. Then there will be a full service supplier, as you can see to the far left, but they could also make a bid for one or two or three or whatever, how many they wanted to. And in addition, we wanted to open for suppliers who were perhaps small and new to the game. Perhaps they didn't have the capacity to deliver to all our units at the university, at least not simultaneously. So it was possible to them. For them to limit their offer to just one geographic location or two geographic locations. For instance, you could say that, yeah, I will only deliver to your faculties in the city center. And we also built in a flexibility in the contracts, meaning that suppliers who only have contract for, let's say, one of the categories, if they perform well during the contract period, they may win more categories. So they have the opportunity to start small and grow big during the contract period. But even though we put a lot of effort into making this available for everyone and splitting up the contract, I was a bit worried if we will get enough competition because we had high sustainability requirements. Luckily, that was not the case. We received more tenders than we have ever done before. Some from small companies, some from larger ones. There were four of them who were startups. Six had under 20 million Norwegian kroner in yearly revenue, and that's quite small because this contract value is over 20 million each year. And we had nine first-time tenderers, at least for us. They hadn't made a bid for a contract at the university before. And that's cool because it shows that we reached out to more than the usual suspects. Okay, so I told you that this threshold for submitting bids can be really high. Here's what some of the things we did to lower the threshold. First, we targeted the invitations to suppliers because we know that not everyone hangs around at Doffin.no or the European database for public tenders. So we have to reach out to them in some way. We did a bid conference on how to submit the tender. We tried to simplify the tender document in every possible way, and we limited the documentation requirements needed. For instance, we had only one or perhaps two qualification criteria, and that was tax certificate and a company license, and we're obliged to ask for them. So. This is just an example of how we limited the documents needed at the bid deadline. There were certain things they had to deliver then, and we asked for more documentation as we went through the negotiation phase. And so they sort of learned from us, and we learned from them during the negotiation phase. And finally, we ended up with four suppliers. I don't think I mentioned who they are, but they're Gastro, Elvebredden, Creative Catering, and Lett. So let's jump to the final part of my presentation. And this is something I love to talk about, contract management and follow-up. Because I think, I can only speak for myself, but I think the public are they could do this a lot better, to put it like that, in that way. Because let me show you I think it's quite underestimated, actually, the value of it. L let me show you a scenario or a graph that illustrates what I believe is two quite common scenarios for framework contracts in the public sector. And the first line here shows that shows the course of the or the how long the contract will last, usually 4 years. The y-axis has supplier performance ranging from really poor to really good. And usually you put your requirements somewhere around adequate. And then you are perhaps surprised that your supplier performs somewhere around your minimum requirements, so somewhat close to them. And why is that? Why don't they strive to perform better and overachieve? Well, I think first of all, they are not usually motivated to do so. They are not usually given an award for performing better than you require. And secondly, it doesn't their performance doesn't influence the chance of them getting a new tender after the 4 year period, because during the legislation and everything, it's quite difficult to put an emphasis on how your early supplier has performed. So you might also end up with an even worse scenario, scenario two, that actually the supplier performance gets worse during the contract period. And this can happen if you don't follow up on your contract. For instance, if the supplier don't risk any fines for delivering late and so on, then they will have no incentive to perform better, because they know that when it's time to renegotiate it, when it's time for a new public tender, their performance, what they have performed, doesn't really matter. They start on scratch together with other competitors. And what we are trying to do here is, yeah, first of all, we have set the bar a bit higher with our requirements. So I would say that if you comply with our minimum requirements, you do a pretty good job. But we want them also to improve during the contract period. I have to say that little shift in the graph is illustrates that right now we are talking about shifting them to a higher level of performance, and we work a lot of that. We work with that together with the supplier, but we want to improve pretty fast. And how can we do that? Well, I think one of the solutions is this incentive model that we have come up with, and it looks like this. Every year we do an assessment and evaluation of their performance on sustainability and user satisfaction. And those who do a good job on these two will get the status as a preferred supplier. And this picture may change during the contract period, who is the preferred supplier. And the preferred supplier will get a bigger share of the cake, more revenue. And we also make them commit to a partnership plan, which sets out ambitious goals for the contract. What are we trying to achieve? There are both joint goals and or joint projects that everyone should collaborate on. You can see some of them there. One of them is eliminate single use of packaging and or eliminate single use packaging. And they can also commit to their own goals. But anyway, on the joint project, they have committed to allocate 3% of their revenue to this project. So that will be quite a lot when you think about the contract value, which is somewhere around 90 million in total. And these are some examples of the selected projects that our suppliers commit to. And I think, well, one of the things that are interesting to see, I will not go into detail about everyone, but it is that they have put a lot of emphasis on working with a value chain. For instance, more direct trade, an increased share of organic ingredients, increase the share of surplus products, and interestingly enough, for this conference, I think, increase the share of Norwegian ingredients, and they commit to that. We cannot ask them to do so, but they can commit to that themselves. We're also pretty excited for the last one. If we can get some of them to, actually, three out of four has committed to eco-label their catering service in the Nordic Swan. And that will be probably the first one in Norway if they can accomplish that. So my conclusion, at least, is that contract incentives seem to work. It has done already in making them compete who has the most ambitious project. And we, of course, evaluated on who were most likely to succeed. And we will follow up if they succeed in the contract period, of course. So, yeah, there's an expression saying the proof is in the pudding. We haven't yet tasted their pudding, so we don't know exactly how it tastes like. We just started on the contract, but this just illustrates that, of course, we are dependent on that the supplier perform well. And even though we have put out a set of contract requirements that we think are good, they have to perform well, and they have to show everyone that sustainable meals may also taste good. We did actually a taste sampling this Monday. So 2,100 taste samples were delivered to employees, and the results were pretty uplifting. They thought this was good. I think this is a better picture that illustrates what we will get on the menu. Actually, we asked the suppliers to showcase how sustainable meal may look like. So we hope this will give everyone a positive experience. And perhaps if they can come to work, we have somewhere around 6,500 employees. If they can come to work, taste what sustainability is on a plate, get inspired, maybe cook more sustainable for themselves, inspire others, then we could have a real impact that's larger than ourselves. So, with that said, I would like to thank you for your attention. Please feel free to join us, actually, if you are representing a higher education institution in Oslo. It still might be possible to join in the contract. Or if you're not, please steal from us. Please spread the words of our sustainable contract terms. I've added a link there that you can look into when you get the documents for the presentation. Yeah, I think that was about it. Thank you all.